Vicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vicatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we are definitely stepping off solid ground.
We are. We're taking a plunge, you could say, into marine biology. A really foundational look, actually, using the work of Philip V. Mladenov as our guide.
Right. Mladenov's work. And, you know, this isn't just about listing fish species, is it? It sounds like it goes much deeper.
Oh, absolutely. The core idea, right from the start, is that the ocean covering, what, over 70% of Earth? It's not just water. It's this incredibly complex, interconnected, three-dimensional living engine. And it's vital, like fundamentally vital for ecological balance, climate, biodiversity.
So understanding it is basically understanding our planet's future.
That's the argument. Yeah. If we want to get a handle on where things are headed, we really have to start with the ocean.
Okay. That sets some pretty high stakes. So who is Philip Mladenov? Why him? What makes his perspective the one to focus on here?
Well, he's a pretty distinguished figure in the field. Professor Emeritus at the University of Otago in New Zealand. He spent decades researching marine ecosystems. But his specialty is kind of interesting. Echinoderms.
Echinoderms. Okay, remind me, that's starfish. Sea urchins.
Exactly. Right? Sea stars, sea cucumbers, urchins. Things that live on the seafloor, often.
Hmm. So not the big flashy stuff like whales. How does focusing on, well, starfish give him insight into the whole system? Seems quite specific.
That's the interesting part. It gives him this unique view from the ground up, literally. Echinoderms are actually crucial for, you know, keeping the seafloor healthy, controlling algae, even affecting reef structure. So Mladenov bridges this really complex, high-level science with accessible teaching. And he's done field work everywhere, polar waters, tropical reefs. He gets the big picture.
Ah, I see. So it's that mix of deep scientific knowledge, but also real-world, hands-on experience across diverse environments. That makes sense.
Exactly. Rigor and practicality.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. How does he approach teaching us about this vast subject? You said it's foundational.
Yeah, it builds logically. He doesn't just throw you into the deep end, so to speak. He starts with the absolute basics, the physics and chemistry of seawater itself. Why water behaves the way it does, you know, its density, how it holds heat.
The non-living stuff first.
Right, because that dictates everything for the life within it. Then he layers on the organisms, the different ecosystems, and finally tackles the big conservation issues we're facing now.
And the central thread running through it all is evolution, adaptation.
Pretty much. Yeah. That these marine environments have forced life to come up with truly extraordinary adaptations. Solutions to problems that just don't exist on land. It's a window into how evolution works under pressure. Literally.
And he really hammers home the ocean's role in climate, doesn't he? Not just as a place with life, but as a driver of climate.
Oh, massively. He frames the ocean as Earth's primary life support system. So ocean health is planetary health. That connection is absolutely central to his whole message.
Okay, let's dive into that first part then, the environment itself. The physical constraints. You said water's properties are the master variables. What does that mean in practice?
Well, think about it. Water is dense. Mm. It's heavy. It takes a lot of energy to heat it up, and it holds that heat for a long time. That's high heat capacity. These basic properties of the H2O molecule shape everything. How creatures move, how they regulate temperature, how nutrients are distributed.
Yeah.
It all comes back to the water.
And then you add depth, which means adding pressure and losing light fast.
Right. The light issue is huge.
Yeah.
Mladenov talks about the photic zone. That's the top layer where sunlight penetrates enough for photosynthesis. Below that, the aphotic zone, permanent darkness.
And how deep is the photic zone typically?
Well, even in really clear water, maybe only down to 100 meters, perhaps 200 max, but the average ocean depth is like 3,700 meters.
Wow. So something like 95% or more of the ocean volume is dark.
Exactly. Completely dark. Relying on whatever sinks down from that thin surface layer and dealing with crushing pressure, of course.
And it's not still water either. The currents. He calls them a global conveyor belt. What's their main job? Moving heat. Life.
Both, really. But the nutrient and heat distribution is critical. Mm. These massive currents, driven by wind, temperature, salinity differences, they move heat from the equator towards the poles. That's fundamental climate regulation right there.
Okay.
And they also drive upwelling, bringing nutrient-rich water up from the deep to fertilize the surface waters. That's what fuels the productivity in the photic zone. It connects everything.
So the physics sets the stage. Now, the life that has to play on that stage, Mladenov groups them by lifestyle, right? Drifters, swimmers, bottom dwellers.
Yep. Plankton are the drifters, nekton are the swimmers, and benthos are the bottom dwellers.
Let's start with the drifters, the plankton. You hear the term, but they seem small, insignificant maybe? Mladenov argues otherwise.
Hugely otherwise. They are the absolute foundation. You've got phytoplankton, tiny plant-like cells, and zooplankton, the tiny animals that eat them.
The phytoplankton. He calls them the grass of the sea. But they do something even more vital for us land dwellers, don't they?
This is the statistic that always gets me. Yes, they're the base of the food web, but through photosynthesis, these microscopic organisms produce, wait for it, half of the world's oxygen.
Half. Seriously.
Half. Every second breath you take. Thank the phytoplankton.
Okay, that changes things. Suddenly, plankton seem incredibly important.
Right, and then you have the nekton, fish, squid, whales mastering swimming buoyancy, and the benthos on the bottom, figuring out how to cling on, or filter food from the water or sediment.
The adaptations must be wild, dealing with pressure, salt balance.
Incredible adaptations. Things like specialized proteins to stop cells collapsing under pressure, really complex ways to manage salt levels in their bodies, osmoregulation, clever ways to float or sink without using too much energy.
It's one thing to list adaptations, but Mladenov shows them in action in specific places, right? These theaters of life.
Exactly. He uses key ecosystems to illustrate how the physics and biology interact, like the intertidal zone, the rocky shorelines between high and low tide.
Right, you can actually see the bands of life there.
Yeah, it's a perfect natural experiment. You see clear zones of different species based purely on how long they can tolerate being out of the water or wave action. It's evolution happening right in front of you.
And kelp forests, he calls them underwater forests. What's the key lesson there?
Kelp forests introduce the idea of a keystone species. The classic example is the sea otter. Kelp provides this amazing rich habitat, but sea urchins love to eat kelp. If left unchecked, they'll just mow it all down.
Creating an urchin baron, he calls it.
Exactly. But sea otters, they love to eat sea urchins. So you keep the otters, they control the urchins, and the kelp forest thrives.
Yeah.
Take the otters away, the whole system collapses, one species holding it all together.
That's a powerful concept. And then the big one, coral reefs. Rainforests of the sea.
Yeah, incredible biodiversity hotspots. But their beauty is built on a really crucial partnership, symbiosis. The coral animals themselves, the polyps, they have tiny algae called zooxanthellae living inside their tissues.
Okay.
Those algae photosynthesize and provide the coral with like 90% of its food. It's incredibly efficient, but it's also incredibly fragile.
Which is why they're so vulnerable to warming water, the bleaching.
Precisely. If the water gets too warm, the coral gets stressed and kicks out the algae. That's bleaching. It loses its color and its main food source. It's a sign that delicate balance has broken down.
So these ecosystems show life thriving under specific conditions. But what about the really extreme places, the deep, dark ocean?
Right, now we go to the frontiers, the deep sea. Life down there is completely different. No sunlight means no photosynthesis. So most life relies on marine snow.
Marine snow? Sounds nicer than it probably is.
Yeah, basically a constant slow drift of organic stuff from above dead plankton, bits of fish, fecal pellets. Sounds gross, but it's the energy base for the abyss.
And the creatures. Weird is probably an understatement.
Oh, yeah. Bioluminescence is common, making their own light for hunting or communication. Giant eyes on some fish to catch any stray photons. And those pressure-resistant proteins we mentioned earlier are essential.
But then there's the really mind-bending discovery, hydrothermal vents.
Ah, yes. This completely rewrote the rules. These are like underwater hot springs, often spewing out minerals from the Earth's crust. Super hot, toxic water. And yet, teeming with life. Giant tube worms, weird crabs, bacteria.
And they don't use sunlight at all, right? This is the chemosynthesis thing.
Exactly, chemosynthesis. Instead of photosynthesis using light energy, the base of this food web is bacteria that use chemical energy. They extract energy from chemicals like hydrogen sulfide bubbling out of the vents.
So life doesn't always need the sun.
Nope. That discovery was huge. It proved life could exist based on geothermal energy, completely decoupled from the sun. Massive implications for finding life elsewhere, too.
Okay, so we've seen the environment, the life, the ecosystems, the extremes. If you zoom out, what are the big overarching messages Mladenov wants us to take away from all this?
I think the first absolutely critical theme is interconnectedness. On every scale, we talked about currents connecting oceans, marine snow connecting surface and deep, but it also means, you know, pollution running off farmland into a river can impact fisheries hundreds of miles away or contribute to dead zones. It's all linked. You can't isolate bits of it.
Yeah, that really comes through. And my main takeaway links to that. Seeing the ocean as Earth's life support system, it's not just out there. We just heard phytoplankton make half our oxygen. The ocean regulates climate. It drives nutrient cycles that agriculture depends on. So marine conservation isn't just about saving whales. It's about, well, saving ourselves, essentially.
Right. Couldn't agree more. Which leads straight into his third major theme, and maybe the most sobering one, the Anthropocene human impact. Basically, human activity is now the main driver changing the ocean. Climate change is warming the water. Overfishing is restructuring food webs, pollution, and crucially, ocean acidification.
The deadly duo he calls warming and acidification. What is acidification exactly?
It's from all the extra CO2 we put in the atmosphere. Mm. The ocean absorbs a lot of it, which is good in one way, but it changes the water chemistry, making it more acidic. And that makes it harder for organisms like corals or plankton with shells or shellfish to actually build their skeletons and shells. It literally dissolves the building blocks they need.
Wow. So we're changing the fundamental chemistry of the ocean, that vulnerability. After learning about all these amazing adaptations, realizing we're changing things faster than life can adapt, that's pretty confronting.
It is. And Mladenov has some really concise, powerful ways of summing up these big ideas that really stick with you.
Yeah, I know you pulled out a few key quotes or core concepts.
I did. One that really reframes your thinking is about the scale. He emphasizes that the oceans aren't empty voids, but three-dimensional living systems where every cubic meter teems with life. It forces you to visualize the sheer volume of life we're affecting.
That's a great image. It's not just the surface.
Right. And then there's the exploration aspect. The deep sea remains less explored than the surface of Mars. Just think about that. So much potential for discovery still out there.
Puts our knowledge in perspective.
Definitely. And finally, on adaptation. Marine organisms have evolved solutions to challenges that don't exist on land. It highlights why marine biology is its own crucial field. The rules are different underwater.
Okay, so bringing this amazing complex science back down to Earth, or rather, back to the listener, how can understanding all this actually be applied in our lives? What difference does knowing about echinoderms or chemosynthesis make?
Well, one very direct application is informed consumption. Understanding food webs, knowing about things like bycatch, unintended species, cotton nets,
right,
or the damage bottom trawling does to those benthic communities Mladenov studied. It equips you to make genuinely better choices about seafood. Using sustainable seafood guides suddenly makes a lot more biological sense.
Right. It's not just a label. You understand the why behind it. And the climate connection seems huge, too.
Absolutely. Climate awareness becomes much more tangible when you know that ocean acidification directly harms the tiny plankton that form the base of the food web and the corals that build entire ecosystems. Suddenly, your personal carbon footprint feels directly linked to the survival of these foundational marine systems. It's not abstract anymore.
Yeah, it connects the dots.
And there's also the future potential. Mladenov touches on bioprospecting. Because marine life has evolved in such unique ways, the ocean is like this vast library of uncapped genetic and chemical secrets. Think potential new medicines, anti-cancer drugs from sponges, for example, or new enzymes, new materials. There's huge potential locked away in that biodiversity if we don't destroy it first.
Hmm. So this deep dive really underscores that marine biology isn't just a niche science. It's fundamental to understanding life on Earth, period.
That's the core lesson for me. It provides the diagnosis for many planetary problems, but also hopefully points towards solutions. We have to stop seeing the ocean as infinite and start seeing it as this incredibly complex, vital, and ultimately quite vulnerable system we depend on.
Yeah, what really struck me, thinking about Mladenov's work, especially the less explored than Mars's idea, is the sense of urgency. We're impacting this vast realm profoundly, often before we even understand what's there.
Exactly.
So the final thought Mladenov leaves us with, perhaps, isn't just knowledge, but a call to action, a call for stewardship. We need to see ourselves not just as users of the ocean, but as caretakers of this incredible blue heart of our planet.
Well said. A responsibility, really.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.